Happy March Madness it is. Welcome to the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated Podcast. I am Matt Minnick, your host, joined as always by Michael Rogner, coming to you on, what is this, March 15th. This is the podcast that we did not get to do last year, Michael. There was COVID hit just before March Madness, and you know, arguably FSU's best chance to cut down the nets or at least go to the Final Four in the last 50 years or 40 years was not to be. But it feels good to be back a year later and being able to actually do a podcast about March Madness.
So you've got to start the pod with digging up those memories from last year when we were pretty much a lock for the Final Four. So
I don't think I'll ever get over it. I still can't imagine what Trent Forrest feels like, or Patrick, but Trent especially, building your whole career towards that. And we kind of talk about, maybe we'll get into this in a little bit too with this year's version of the team, but you know, Final Four runs usually aren't built in one off season. It's very rarely that, like, even the Kentuckys of the world don't just bring in a bunch of new guys and go to the Final Four. And so it's a process. It's a maturation period and something that happens over time. And it felt like it was culminating in that. And I honestly don't know how I would get over it if I was Trent Forrest, but let's get over it on this podcast. And we'll go from one sad subject to another. How about we'll start off with a disappointing loss, because all losses are disappointing, but especially just given that it looked like there was the chance there to get an ACC championship banner against Georgia Tech, especially when Florida State went up 9 in the second half and you felt like, okay, things are coming together, this is what I'm used to seeing, and then it just, you know, Georgia Tech was just able to close better.
When FSU made that run that you're talking about, that put us up, I think it was 44-35.
That's right.
It looked so good at that point. And then Georgia Tech immediately responds with a 13-2 run to take the lead. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was just like Georgia Tech is fired up and rolling and Florida State is stumbling, and nobody on Florida State's team is able to just will this team to the finish line. And it was a super frustrating game to watch, especially those last 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's always frustrating when your team shoots pretty well. I mean, hey, Florida State was 8 of 15 from the 3-point line, 53%. I wish they took more than 15 shots. They seemed lately, it seems like FSU's allergic to taking some of these open threes that you would expect the best 3-point shooting team in the conference to just fire away, especially when you've got great offensive rebounders. But, you know, so 8 of 15 from three, they shot well from the free throw line. They rebounded well. They did grab some of their own misses, and actually they, you know, kind of even defended well in stretches. The 80 points by Georgia Tech, you know, was a large, when they weren't getting open layups in transition, I thought Florida State defended not terribly. But, you know, you can't turn the ball over 36 or 37% of your possessions and expect to win a conference championship game.
Yeah, the end of game free throws, the kind of intentionally fouling skews the offensive numbers a little bit for Georgia Tech. So, yeah, Florida State did play, you know, at times some championship caliber defense and offense. And when we didn't turn the ball over, I think we scored like, you know, 1.7 points per possession or something crazy. It was
is against Georgia Tech's defense.
Yeah, against a good defense. You cannot lose a game, you know, with an offense that is performing at that high of a level. But I don't even know what the analogy would be of something that's just completely humming along, except for these endless string of stupid hiccups that keep happening. But that was that game. It was just like elite offense sandwiched around strings of turnovers.
Yeah, and the worst kind of turnovers too. Live ball turnovers, numerous just straight up steals. I think what Georgia Tech had 15 steals. And you know, after the game, I, you know, there was everyone likes to talk about teams that are handsy. And look, Florida State over the years has been kind of a handsy team, particularly when you go back to the Chris Singleton days, and, you know, VCU's a handsy team. And but so were all those clean? I don't know. Probably not. But that doesn't really, honestly, in my mind, you need to be stronger with the ball than that anyways. It's or take the shot. Don't try to dribble into the teeth of the defense. Take the open shot that you have, come off the screen, and just pull up and shoot. But if you give a team that many live ball turnovers, that's just not over. You can't overcome it. You know, it's throwing two or three pick sixes in the red zone.
Yeah. You and I have both been on that pulpit for years. Just shoot the ball. You know, when you get an open shot, shoot it. Florida State is always a high level offensive rebounding team, and they typically struggle with turnovers. Well, you shoot the ball when you get an open in rhythm shot, and there's a pretty good chance you're going to rebound it if you miss. You know, it's the UNC philosophy on offense, which, you know, and instead we you know, continue to work the ball around, trying to get it into Ballston in the post, and then throw it out of bounds or hand it to a Georgia Tech player.
Yeah, or not even – sometimes it wasn't even – there were several on, especially MJ, that I can think of where it's like he comes off the screen, gets it. The shot is there. Is it open in the sense that, like, you have your, you know, all day to shoot, like you're standing in the corner? Not really, but these are high-level basketball games. That's not what the definition of open is. The shot is there. Instead, he takes a couple dribbles in, and that is what Georgia Tech is wanting you to do. He's already beat his man. First of all, he's taller than Jose Alvarado. He can just pull up and shoot over him. Second of all, he's already beat him. Jose Alvarado is trailing him. Pull up and shoot. And like you said, we shot 53% from three in that game. Half of those shots might go in, and another 35% are going to be rebounded by us. So those are pretty good odds. Instead, balls get poked away, and it's just leading to run out dunks. So like you said, extremely frustrating. I don't know that there's much else to say other than at this point, given that Raekwon Evans is clearly not, I don't even speculate on what's going on, but I can just say that on the court, he's clearly not performing at the level that he was in January. And he's clearly not performing at even the level that he was last year in his backup role. And without Raekwon Evans being able to initiate the offense, get downhill, it's forcing guys like Polite and MJ Walker or even Scotty to do things that that's not their strengths. And we are a team full of role players who play their role very well. And when guys have to go outside their role, you get 37% of your possessions being turnovers.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is right now, because we essentially do not have a point guard. I mean, it's Raekwon Evans is really struggling.
I mean, he played what, like 10 minutes?
Yeah, he turned the ball over three times. And Scotty is you know, he's still learning the position. He's gonna eventually be a good point guard in the NBA, but he's still learning the position. And you know, that kind of puts Florida State in a bad spot. And we're going from one team that has some small handsy guys, you know, straight into another team that has some small handsy guys on Friday in UNCG. So be interesting to see, you know, if we're able to figure out a way to be strong with the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we'll get there in a second. I mean, we'll just close out the conversation to kind of bridge the first two topics. I think if nothing about the Georgia Tech game changed except that you put Trent Forrest on Saturday night's team, I think Florida State wins by 15. You know?
Yeah, I got nothing to say to that. That is a true statement.
Yeah. So at any rate, the Seminoles finished second in the regular season of the ACC, which is, I would say, like, mildly overachieving. I think going into the season, most people thought they were probably a top four team, but finishing second is mildly overachieving. And the Seminoles finish second in the conference tournament. You know, if you tell me that most years at the beginning, if you said, hey, you're going to make the ACC tournament championship game and it's a 50-50 shot from there, I think I would take it. Does it feel like that this is a I mean, has Leonard Hamilton's program arrived to the point that even in years where we're saying we don't have a point guard or we lost two lottery picks plus the all-time leading winner in FSU history, that they're still able to finish in the, you know, top four of the conference, or top three in the conference, and make the ACC tournament championship game? Does it feel like the program has maybe taken a slight step up from that little stretch where, you know, that 17-18 stretch where it was like we were just starting to get good but still finding our footing?
If you look to all of our friends out there on Twitter, you know, the question that I keep getting is, you know, how disappointing of a season was this? And it's like, you know, we just finished second. You know, it was like, you know, Clemson football, they know that they are going to be in the conference championship next year, like all their fans right now. So if they don't make it, sure, that's a disappointing season. You know, Florida State, we knew they were a good team, but finishing second in the regular season, finishing second in the conference tournament, that is, you know, far short of any kind of disappointing season. The reason that it feels disappointing is because we had two chances to cut down some nets and we blew it in both games. But you know, that's the only reason that we got to those games is because we probably, you know, outperformed expectations a little bit to get there. You know, and now it's we're on to you know, the NCAA tournament, which is a kind of a new season all in itself. And hopefully the guys can regroup and find something that will, you know, enable them to play at their best.
Yeah, no, that's well said. Somebody, and I, you know what, I wish I knew who it was because I'd love to give them the shout out, but someone posted sort of the Bart Torvik, which is like the free KenPom. And in some ways, maybe even a little better because you can manipulate it by dates. And so what they did was they manipulated it for the last 5 years. And, you know, Florida State was essentially ninth in the country in overall performance on the basketball court of all games played in the last 5 years. Florida State was ninth in the country. So like you said, that is to be accomplished, to doing what they're doing on the budget that they're doing it on is pretty impressive. You know, a school like Louisville has not finished in the top two of the ACC standings since 2017 is the last time that Louisville finished in the top two of the ACC standings. And North Carolina has only finished in the top two of the ACC regular season standings once in the last 5 years. So yeah, I think some good things are happening. Let's go on to the NCAA tournament then. Florida State makes it they technically qualify for the NCAA tournament for the fifth consecutive season, since we were the automatic champion bid last year. They're competing in their fourth consecutive NCAA tournament. And I'll be honest, Michael, I was a bit surprised. Okay, I was surprised that Florida State was the four seed. I thought that our performance on the road, we just didn't have a lot of quad one wins, and performance on the road might have let us slip to a five. I was downright shocked that Florida State was seeded as the highest fourth seed, putting them in the weakest one seed bracket.
Yeah, I don't dig into all of the data because there's other people out there that do a much better job than I would do. So I was checking, you know, at Bracket Matrix, not just checking the matrix, but checking the people who have scored the you know, done the best, outperformed, you know, the matrix in the past few years. And those people were listing FSU as a four. So I was thinking, you know, heading, you know, going into the show that FSU was going to be a four. It does seem high, you know, that we're above a few of the teams that were above. It kind of makes me shake my head and wonder what in the world the committee's thinking about. But, you know, whatever, it is what it is. We avoided the Death Star Gonzaga bracket, and we won't see them until the Final Four. So we're good.
Yeah, avoided the Gonzaga bracket that we have quite often fallen into. We've played them three times, and we've been three times in the last decade or so. I think we played them in 2010 or 2011. No, 2010. And then we're also in their bracket once or twice others and just didn't play them. And you know, typically that's been because the way it works is typically these games are played all across the country, and Florida State is often what happens is they can't play in the same bracket as a Duke or a UNC because they can't match up with them in the first couple of rounds since they're in the same conference. And Duke and UNC get seeded in either the East or the South. And so we get shipped out West to play in Gonzaga's bracket. But this year, it's all being played in Indianapolis. If you're just tuning in for the first time, every single game is being played in Indianapolis. And so there really wasn't a concern geographically, and they could just seed them directly on the S curve. And so by virtue of that, Florida State was able to avoid the undefeated and dominant Gonzaga program that is looking for their first national championship. Any thoughts on, I mean, it would be a few games before we get there, but good thing being in Michigan's bracket. I mean, that's what we wanted, right?
I mean, we wanted to not be in Gonzaga's bracket. I don't know that I wanted to be in anybody's bracket. That's the one.
Well, you got to play somebody tough.
Right. If we could have got into a bracket that only had a two seed, yeah, I'd be happy about that. I mean, Michigan's a tough team. Isaiah Livers may not play. He'll probably miss at least the first game, but you know, he's one of their key players. But they have some guy. They got some dudes on that team, and it'll be a very, very, very stiff matchup, and definitely the toughest team that Florida State has played this year.
Well, maybe we'll do the big preview pod for the Michigan game if we make it against them in the Sweet 16. Just looking at a few others before we get to Florida State's matchup. So Illinois could be facing the Georgia Tech team that we just saw in Greensboro. If Georgia Tech wins their first round game, they would be going to face the Illini. That's an interesting one to me because Kofi Coburn is, you know, he's a big, imposing, almost Michael Ojo type of presence. But, you know, Moses Wright can hold his own down there. And the IU Dusamino versus Jose Alvarado matchup would just be a treat to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Illinois in particular is just, they're a fun team to watch. Yeah, especially that I would assume he's got his Zorro mask on these days. It's just,
yeah,
he looks like a superhero out there, and he plays like one. And then, you know, Kofi Coburn just, he reminds me of a particularly skilled Michael Ojo. May he rest in peace. He is very enthusiastic about being out on the floor, which Ojo always was. And he dunks everything, and he's bigger than everybody. And he's just a hell of a basketball player.
Yeah, no, he really is. So that could be a great one to watch over there on the other side of the bracket. Another one, sticking with the trend of ACC teams grabbing an 8-9 seed, you've got UNC, who's really, you know, over the last couple of months, UNC has really kind of turned it on. I believe they're one of the top 30 teams over the last month or so. And they would be going against a Baylor team in the second round that, honestly, Baylor hasn't struggled, but they haven't looked as dominant as maybe they did in January or early February.
Yeah, but in order to get there, they kind of got screwed a little bit in their first game having to play Wisconsin. Wisconsin lost some games coming down the stretch, but they were to Michigan, Illinois, and Iowa, you know, which are all like – you know, yeah, top teams,
one and two seeds.
Yeah, so they didn't beat them, but they're still, you know, a good team, and I would hate to, if I'm Wisconsin, I would be upset that they're matched up against North Carolina in the same way. You know, North Carolina's been playing well, but North Carolina, if they can get that offense rolling, you know, their defense is legit this year, and if they can get that offense rolling, they can beat anybody, including Baylor. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, their offensive rebounding is just incredible. I wish sometimes that we did more of the just put it up and, you know, volleyball it off the backboard. I will say though, March is a guards game, and you know, are you going to trust Jared Butler or Caleb Love when you're getting down? Let's say it's a tie game and there's 5 minutes to go. That certainly would sway me towards Baylor. One other game, and then maybe we'll hop over to the Florida State side of the bracket. you know, we've talked a lot about Villanova losing Colin Gillespie. Frankly, I think both you and I were hoping that, hey, if we've got to play a 4 or 5 seed, you know, let's get Villanova, having just lost their star point guard. That looks to me, if you're looking for a 12-5 upset, I mean, that is, we didn't really get to see an out-of-conference schedule this year, so who knows about some of these mid-majors, but Winthrop always has some solid shooters, and you know, they're 23-1, and going against a team that really is trying to regroup after losing its identity, its star point guard. I don't know. That looks to me like that could be one to circle.
That is certainly going to be a popular upset, and you know, the Pat Kelsey's teams at Winthrop, they're used to winning. You know, these guys are used to winning ball games, and that matters. You know, when you get into the tournament, you end up playing like a, you know, a 16-11 power conference team. You know, that team's not really all that used to winning games, but you know, Winthrop is 23-1 this year. They lost one time.
Right. I don't care what conference you're in. That's hard to do.
Their guys are going to have plenty of confidence in that game. And, you know, the other thing about Winthrop is they get up and down the floor. So that's going to be a pretty exciting game to watch.
Yeah. That's bracket, you know, with the Baylor UNC and the Winthrop Villanova, you've got Ohio State down at the bottom end of the bracket, Arkansas with, boy, if you haven't watched freshman Moses Moody play out at Arkansas, he is a treat to watch. So that South bracket actually looks pretty fun. All right, hopping over to the East, where again, so we're in the Michigan side of things. All these games will be played on Saturday, March 20th. So we're in the 4-13 matchup facing UNC Greensboro, a team that not necessarily with the winning history of maybe a Winthrop or a Davidson, but nonetheless, you know, they're from North Carolina and guys that are grow up playing basketball. And they've got a pretty talented guard in Isaiah Miller.
Yeah, Isaiah Miller is going to turn some heads, man. That guy is we have played some pretty athletic teams this year and some pretty athletic players, but we have not played anybody like Isaiah Miller. He is just an unbelievable athlete. He's thick. He's strong. He has no body fat. He's 6 foot tall, and he's dunked the ball more than any player on Florida State this year. So he's got like a 46-inch vertical, and he always has the ball in his hands. It's my initial reaction when I, you know, the bracket came out, and I tracked down some UNCG games online, and it reminds me of that Murray State team that we buried a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a 6'3" Ja Morant, who is obviously, you know, a better player than Isaiah Miller. But just that's the style of team. It's one guy. He's always got the ball in his hands. He's uber athletic. We got nobody who can guard him. And he's won the defensive player of the year in the SoCon 3 years in a row. So he can kind of play on the other side of the ball as well.
Yeah. He will be, you know, Scotty Barnes is going to be the best pro prospect on the court. But Isaiah Miller might be the best college player on the court, you know, and for, you know, I don't know what that means. I don't, because of his size, he's probably not going to be a legitimate pro prospect. Although a guy that he sort of reminds me of, Nate Robinson, I saw him play live in Raleigh, and watch Nate Robinson, who's about 5'9", and threw it down on some guys, talk about athletic and dunking. So not to say that smaller guys with his athletic ability haven't made the NBA, but he does a lot of things well on the court. The question is as we've seen over the years, when Florida State played the Murray State team with Ja Morant, when Florida State played the Dennis Smith Jr. team when he was at NC State, even some of these Chris Likes teams when he, you know, down at Miami's, can everybody else, I mean, let's even say that Isaiah Miller pops off for 30 points, like that's still only 30 points. Can the rest of the team do enough to slow down what is a very good Florida State offense when they're not turning the ball over?
If Miller does not have a good game, UNCG won't win this game. I mean, their role players are not guys who are going to be dropping 20. They outside of Miller, they look like a pretty standard mid-major team. You know, they've got the center rotation where one of them is undersized and beefy and the other one's 7 feet tall and 150 pounds.
Right.
You know, they got the small guards who can't shoot. You know, they got the 6'7" guy who looks like a high major player walking in the gym, but then you see him play and it's like, yeah, maybe not.
Slow laterally and not a lot of ball handling.
Yeah. And not a single player in the entire team that shoots more than 30, that shoots above 34% from deep. So they're, you know, offensively, this is a team that relies on Isaiah Miller, but just the team as a whole, you know, kind of hangs its hat on the other end of the floor. You know, they're a good, solid defensive team. They pressure the ball like crazy. After every made basket, they're going to be pressuring the inbounds pass. And they're not there to just milk time off the clock. They're there to get steals. You know, they're playing skin to skin. You know, when they're in that pressure defense, and the skinny 7-footer that they have is the second best shot blocker in the nation, which is weird. He was a fairly coveted transfer last year, and he ended up at a mid-major, which was a bit of a surprise considering how much high major hit tension he was getting. He's you know, great shot blocker, and then he shoots more threes than twos, which is kind of weird. So it'll be an interesting matchup on how we defend him as well.
Yeah, it kind of strikes me as what we were just talking about at the opening segment, that if Florida State can just really not commit 35% or turnovers on 35% of their possessions, if, you know, I hate to even say this, but if they can quote unquote limit the turnovers to 25% of their possessions, it feels like a game that they would be able to just, you know, start to be able to get enough into the passing lanes, get enough offensive rebounds, and get to the, you know, guys like Gray, who I just don't see UNCG having someone who can really defend Gray. That in particular seems like the mismatch with a big wing like that who can go out, you know, on the perimeter and also, you know, drive in off the dribble. It feels like, geez, if you can just limit your turnovers to like some travels and some charges, that FSU probably should get the win. If Isaiah Miller is able to rack up 6 or 7 steals and they're able to generate some pressure off some inbounds passes and get a few easy layups that way, well, shoot, if you give a team 16 points off of live ball turnovers, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah, they're going to be very handsy. And we need to convert some of those handsy moments from steals into fouls.
Which means being strong with the ball.
Exactly. You got to be strong with the ball. You got to understand how to use your body to keep a smaller, much quicker guy away from the ball. And I don't know how many of those guys that we have on the roster, but they got to figure it out by Friday. UNCG, they do commit a lot of fouls. You know, they're a deep team. They play a lot of guys. It's like Isaiah Miller and 4 other guys at all times. They never win the free throw battle. Like they're always in games where their opponents are shooting more free throws than them. So, you know, if we can convert some of those steals into free throws, you know, spend some time at the line, get into the bonus early, you know, it'll be looking good for Florida State. Just because UNCG's offense, you know, outside of Miller just isn't very good. And if you can be strong with the ball, it's going to lead to some 10-0 runs or 13-2 runs or, you know, whatever. And if you pile together like 4 of those runs in a game, that's an awful steep hill to climb for a 13 seed to try to stay in that.
Especially a 13 seed that doesn't really shoot the ball all that well from 3. And to your point about being strong with the ball, just for folks listening. So the FSU UNC game in the ACC tournament where MJ Walker had the ball just across the timeline and he got clearly grabbed on the arm by Garrison Brooks. I'm not quite sure what Jay Billis was seeing there when he was saying that there wasn't a foul, but you know, that's an example of MJ Walker being strong with the ball, you know, 2 hands on it, stepping through and the whistle is called. The referee is going to usually call that a foul. in the Georgia Tech game, when it's the MJ Walker or the Anthony Polite, it's dribbling, the dribble's way out away from your body high, or you're not putting your body in between the defender and the ball, or you're not making decisive action, decisive steps or cuts, that's going to lead to steals every time. And the referee's not going to reward that with fouls called. And so they've got to figure out how to just be, to make decisive movements and be strong with the ball, two hands. And look, you're bigger when you can just stand up over the top and either shoot or pass over the top of the press. Do that. Don't stand around or over dribble. You start over dribbling, it's going to go the other way. 2 points with Isaiah Miller.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see is a lot of, when we're inbounding the ball, we're going to have two guys that are hunting for it. Both those guys are going to be being harassed by small little guards, and we'll probably see Balsha or Osborne. Or somebody, you know, racing back across the midcourt line to be that open guy in the middle. So we're going to need that person to make a good decision once they get the ball. And if we can do that, you know, it allows you to kind of ramp up the tempo a little bit. You know, their best defenders have to now scramble 80 feet to get back into the play, and you can really, you know, get some quick hitters, and hopefully Ham and crew are kind of working on that, you know, catch the ball 30 feet inbounds, turn, and, you know, make some good athletic moves to get some quick scores without, you know, turning the ball over.
All that is well said. All right. Why don't we'll take a quick break, and then we'll just peek ahead at maybe the Georgetown Colorado game, since that would be potential. You know, the winner of that would be the matchup for Florida State in the second round, should they get by UNCG. Okay. So we just gave sort of the preview of UNCG, the Fighting Isaiah Millers, and Florida State needs to be strong with the ball and convert their opportunities around the basket and at the free throw line. But if they are to prevail in that game, they will face, so they're a 4 seed. That means they'll face the winner of the 5-12 matchup, which is a Colorado team is the 5 seed that quite honestly reminds me a lot of Florida State in the sense that they are extremely good at home. They win the vast majority of their home games. And they have some, you know, inconsistent play is a nice way to put it on the road. Several losses that were at least as bad as our loss to Notre Dame on the road, to Cal and Washington. Although they do, unlike Florida State, they have a stud point guard, senior point guard, McKinley Wright, who is a really, really talented player. And then they're playing the Georgetown Hoyas, who would not have been in the tournament if it weren't for them winning the Big East championship, the Big East conference tournament title. But they did. They won, I don't know, it was three games in a row and made it to the title game and crushed Creighton in that one. Would you prefer one or the other, Michael?
Georgetown, absolutely. Everybody is saying, oh, Georgetown just played their way through the Big East tournament. They've got all the momentum. They won 4 straight games. Well, you know, if you want to build your bracket off of who did well in conference tournaments, then good luck. You're not going to win your pool. 538 did a good analysis on this maybe last year, where, you know, they looked at all these teams like Georgetown that had just made this sort of Cinderella run through the conference tournament, and they, you know, evaluated whether they played better or worse in the NCAA tournament than the computers predicted, and they did not play better. So there's no, you know, evidence that Georgetown is really gonna, you know, build on this momentum, and Colorado is you know, Colorado's gonna be favored in that game, you know, meaning that, you know, Georgetown is the lesser of the two teams, and we want them. Plus, they turn the ball over a shitload. If you think Florida State is loose with the ball, wait till you see, Georgetown. It's like a little bit like the old Florida State teams. So give me Georgetown, and I'll be very happy.
Yeah, So when we were talking to each other and kind of Slack and whatnot, before the bracket reveal, and you know, Colorado's not the five seed that I would have chosen, or four seed. Yeah, I think a lot of these fours and fives, to be honest, when I look around the bracket, a lot of them are interchangeable to me, particularly the resumes. But the Colorado's not the five seed I would have chosen. I think Villanova would have been absolutely my top choice at the five seed. And even maybe someone like a Purdue who's on the four line, I felt like, you know, they have that one big body, Travion Williams. We could have bodied him up. They don't shoot it all that well. It just felt like a team we could match up well with. Although I wouldn't say that Colorado is the worst that we could have drawn either. I think there are some other options that are worse, but Georgetown is absolutely the 12 that you wanted to be in the bracket with. If you told me that Florida State was either a four or a five and said, here's your 12s you get to pick from, Georgetown is 100% the team that I would have picked. And that is absolutely because of what you said about their turnovers. I mean, we would probably turn them over on 30% of their possessions, given just our length and our ability to jump some passing lanes sometimes. So it would be a sloppy game. There would be a lot of dunks on both sides, but I would feel pretty good. If we get by UNC Greensboro and our opponent is Georgetown, I would feel pretty good about that situation.
Yeah, they have a few guys who can really light it up from three, which would, you know, that would be the main danger. It's like we talk about this all the time when we're playing the Boston Colleges or the Pitts of the ACC. You know, we worry about, do they have somebody who are a couple guys who can come out and go, you know, 5 for 7 or whatever from deep and really keep them in it. And, you know, this is one of those teams that has those shooters. But beyond that, you know, I'm not seeing anything, you know, that particularly scares me about them.
Well, and it's what we just saw with Florida State. I mean, Florida State shot 53% from three against Georgia Tech and still lost because they turn it over every third possession. So if Georgetown's going to be turning it over that much, I just would. Again, I mean, if you're in the NCAA tournament, you have to play a decent team at somewhere, and I would prefer them over the other options. Have you given any thought, Michael, about the arenas? I don't know if folks know this, but so it's all in Indianapolis, but I say Indianapolis, it's actually more like maybe the World Cup, where there are games that are being played kind of all across Indiana. And so Florida State's first game is in the Bankers Life Fieldhouse, which is where the Indiana Pacers of the NBA play. But other games are being played in Hinkle Fieldhouse, which is where Butler plays. They're being played in Assembly Hall, which is where IU plays. Some are even being played in Lucas Oil Field, you know, where the Colts play. And so is there one that – oh, and here's this nuance too. They're not going to let teams play in the same arena in back-to-back games. So if you play in Hinkle your first game – then you're going to be in, you know, one of the others for your next game. Do you care about those things, Michael? Is there one that you'd just like to see Florida State in because it's a cool arena?
I would love to see them at Hinkle. I'd love to see it with a full crowd. Unfortunately, you know, that's not happening, but you know, Hinkle's kind of a legendary place, you know, as is Assembly Hall, but Hinkle has that, you know, kind of magic to it. We would love to see our players get the chance to play in there. I'm sure they're probably pretty excited about playing in an NBA arena, but you know, it's better than playing in Lucas Oil, and I hope we don't get any games there. But you know, it's going to be a big fancy arena without a ton of people in it. We know that the sight lines should be pretty good at being an NBA arena. You know, and certainly there's not going to be like a leaky faucet or something in the locker room, which you might run into in Hinkle. It's going to be, you know, everything's going to be top notch for the guys. So when you go to the NCAA tournament for the first time, it can be an overwhelming experience. And, you know, we've got some guys, you know, Balsha and, you know, Scotty Barnes, you know, this is their first trip to the NCAA tournament. And they're going to be walking into an NBA arena with all the fancy crap, and hopefully they're able to tune that out a little bit and just get down to playing basketball.
Yeah, you're right about it. Hey, did we play in Hinkle? I feel like we played Butler in the NIT maybe, or was that Valpo? You know what? I think that was I think that was Valpo. At any rate, you are definitely spot on. I would have loved to see us play in Hinkle. So that's actually where Georgetown and Colorado are playing their game. So we will not be playing there. If that rule is held true that no team can play two in a row, we will not be playing in Hinkle in the second round. Ironically, I've actually been in the Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I was at a work conference last year or maybe 2 years ago, pre-COVID, and saw the Pacers play the Pistons. And it is a nice arena. It's probably more like the Greensboro arena that we just played in versus maybe like the Dean Dome, which even though the Dean Dome holds, you know, 18,000-19,000, in the sense that it's one of those arenas that has a lot of space in between the backboard and where the seat risers are there on the end zone. So we'll see how many fans they put in. I think that arena was probably, the sight lines were probably designed to have a full fans back behind the basket than maybe empty space. So it's not going to be as nice a sight lines as Hinkle would be, but it's certainly better than Lucas Oil, which means that I think we're either in Assembly Hall or Lucas Oil, and maybe there's one other that they're playing them in too, but we're not in Bankers Life and we're not in Hinkle for round two. So fingers crossed that we're in Assembly Hall because I'd like to have our 3-point shooters in a nice cozy gym going up against Colorado.
Yeah, it's a very Indiana thing to do to have an NBA arena called a field house.
But at any rate, so that's we'll probably, I don't know if we'll come back after the Saturday UNC Greensboro game. I guess maybe we will for a loss for sure, because we'll want to wrap up the season then. But other than that, we may not come back until after the second round. But any last thoughts on just the NCAA tournament at all? I saw there were some referees that are not going to be participating. Do you think that, I mean, are you laying odds on that all 68 teams make it without a COVID scare?
Yeah, we have not talked about COVID during this pod, and that's the one wild card, which you know has me worried. You know, all it takes is one player from Florida State to get it, and that could be it.
Not even get it. Maybe one player with a false positive.
We've had that during the year, so. Already a ref has got it, and contract tracing with five other refs, you know, has sent them home. So they won't be around until the, you know, Sweet 16 round. So nobody, as of the time that we're recording this pod, nobody's out of it yet. But I would be shocked if Louisville doesn't get to play as a substitution team. I think they're the first listed as the first team on the substitution list. And I'll be pretty shocked if somebody isn't, you know, booted out of the first round and Louisville steps in.
And can you imagine too? So let's say it's Kansas. We already know that Kansas is leaving two or three players behind. I don't even know if they're practicing in full this week because of their COVID situation. So if Kansas can't go, Louisville, the first team out, steps in as the 3 seed playing Eastern Washington. I mean, I guess that's what you got to do. You can't reseed the whole thing on Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the seeds are the seeds. The matchups are the matchups. Everything's already scheduled. The teams are prepped. They've got film and they're game planning for a specific team. And then, you know, boom, one team goes out. You can't do anything about the other 67 teams. So, you never know. You know. If Louisville becomes like a 15 seed or something, that's, somebody's going to be pretty upset about that.
Yeah. Talk about a tough 15 seed. Let's hope that UNCG doesn't get booted and then they join. Although I don't know, we have a lot of luck against the Chris Mack led Cardinals. Yeah. So maybe that would be a good result.
Yeah. They are a 15 seed in our world.
Yeah. Maybe Colorado gets the boot and it'll be Louisville versus Georgetown. All right. Well, as always, good talking to you, and go Noles, and more importantly, go March Madness. It's good to have it back. For Michael, I'm Matt.